of the darkness and into the light. It's the This Woman Knows podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the This Woman Knows podcast. I am your host, Lisa Ann Alexander. Today concludes a three-part series on weight. Are we shiny, happy people? We've been taking a deep dive into the documentary and just discovering, if we know, the proximity of evangelicals and Christian nationalists and Christian fundamentalists, and helping us understand what we're seeing on the world stage. And so I'm very grateful for Carrie Connolly, who came and did an awesome job of explaining to us what we're seeing, what we're experiencing. If you haven't taken a listen, I encourage you to do so. Those episodes, they're very informative. And my hope is that we all walk away with a greater understanding and more grace and compassion for people. So today we're going to talk to Jane Ryan, because a big part of that documentary is this idea of a purity culture. And purity culture says that you wait until you're married to have sex. And so Jane is a licensed marriage and family therapist. She's a certified sex therapist, and she has her master's degree in marriage and family therapy. And so she works with quite a few couples who are looking to heal their marriages from the impact of purity culture. So everybody, help me welcome Jane to the show, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
Thank you so much for coming on to This Woman Knows.
Oh, thank you, Lisa, for having me.
Absolutely. So tell us what you know about purity culture. Can you give us a working definition? What is it, and where did it come from?
Yes. So in a very succinct way, purity culture is a set of beliefs, ideas, teachings that basically say sex is a sin. And the only way to make it pure is to save it for the context of a heterosexual marriage. So marriage between a cisgender heterosexual man and cisgender heterosexual woman. And it is, purity culture is a system that aims to control sexuality and gender. It centers heteronormativity. It is homophobic, transphobic. It's very dualistic in its thinking. It supports systemic racism. It supports misogyny. And I can go on and on.
Wow.
Yeah.
One of the things just recently, so I was watching a documentary about cereal, of all things, because I like watching documentaries about odd things. And this particular documentary said that Mr. Kellogg, who invented cornflakes, did so that people would not be sexually aroused. I believe he was, is he Mormon? Seventh-day Adventist, I believe. Mm-hmm. And the belief was that sex was sinful, that it was evil, and it was this base state in our nature that needed to be not acknowledged or suppressed. And so and he believed that breakfasts that consisted of eggs and bacon kept you aroused sexually. So we created cornflakes so that you would not be sexually aroused.
Oh my gosh. I remember learning about that when I was a grad student, but I didn't know he was connected to a church, but I remember that story. And the interesting thing about purity culture is a lot of people think, you know, a lot of people's experience currently is when it was kind of started in the 1990s, early 2000s, had it heyday, so to speak, mm-hmm. as the evangelical Christian church kind of spread and grew. And that's the purity culture that most people have a sense about. But when I think about purity culture and I talk about it with clients, I like people to kind of give it a broader context, because I think purity culture is part of our ancient history. and started way back when there was a shift from matrilineal matriarchal societies where women had positions of leadership and power and their sexuality was revered. And then the patriarchal powers that be associated with the early Christian church decided that was threatening their power. So they began to squash women's power. And along with that came squashing women's sexuality. So throughout history, there's been some version of purity culture, the European witch hunts, the Salem, Massachusetts witch hunts, all very much that was the day's purity culture. And most people now know it as what happened in the 1990s in our country. And then there's a form of purity culture throughout the world in different religions. It goes, it has a version in many religions, not just the evangelical Christian.
Right, correct. And then I know that that history is seemingly to repeat itself, at least here in the States, and there seems to be a regression and this real push for women not having autonomy over their bodies. And it really is history repeating itself. So this purity culture is not going out without a fight, is what I'll say, is what it seems, that it's not going out no. kicking and screaming.
Yes, I agree.
So when we talked earlier, when you think about purity culture, it's automatically assumed that we're speaking, it's geared towards women. But when you and I talked, you said that you have men as clients as well, that you have to come in and have conversations with. Can you tell us how purity culture impacts men and why are they coming in? What do they need to be liberated from?
Yeah, I love that question. And it's really important for people to kind of understand it. Purity culture impacts all humans. And so if you identify as a male and you've been raised to think, to identify as male and have learned all those teachings in purity culture, which are very traditional masculine, you're the head of the household, your wife is to be submissive or obedient. There's different versions of that word that's used, but as far as sexuality, men are taught that they are entitled to their sexuality. So in purity culture, as long as they follow the rules growing up, which is do not have sex until marriage, stay pure. Then once they do get married, they're going to be rewarded and they're going to have this great sex and they're entitled to the great sex and their wife should be ready to give them great sex whenever they desire it. So they do not learn a sense of what it takes to the nuanced interactions that sexuality and intimacy requires. They just think I'm entitled and I sort of own my wife. She is the object of my desire and she is there to please me. So they really get shortchanged in terms of being able to like evolve as a full human and really explore their sexuality and what it means to them and how they want to express it. It's very, for men, the idea is sex is intercourse. So again, that's the heteronormative, sex is intercourse, which means that there's a high pressure on having intercourse, having orgasm, and therefore high pressure on having this erect penis all the time when you're having intercourse, right? And so if you get into the anatomy and physiology of that, which I don't want to get too much into the details and the weeds with that, but erections need relaxation. They need feeling safe. They need feeling acceptance. And if you go into a sexual situation, you think, I have to have intercourse and I have to have an orgasm, then there's anxiety. And a lot of men then suffer not being able to get an erection because there's so much pressure on it has to be intercourse. And if I don't have an erect penis and can't have intercourse, then I'm not really a man. So it's all, I mean, it's very complex in how it kind of plays out.
I had no idea that, you know, men were traumatized by purity culture as well as the women, and that they were seeking help so that they could experience intimacy, sexual pleasure for the first times in their lives as well. Mm-hmm. So I know that we hear of the horror stories, at least I have, about women being raped. And then this question of, can she be raped? That was a question I remember in the 90s. If she is married and she is her husband's, then I distinctly remember this conversation is a wife cannot be raped. And I just thought that was the most horrible thing I had ever heard. It's like, you've got to be kidding me.
Yes, it's horrific. And it's a good example of like, men are not taught consent skills or communication around consent because they don't have to. They feel like, you know, I don't need to ask my wife for consent. And so, again, the nuanced conversations that have to happen around consent in intimate relationships, they don't know how to do that, nor do they think they have to do that. And so this idea of understanding how to say yes, how to say no, how to negotiate desired differences is all very much lacking when people are coming from a purity culture mindset.
And see, I know a little something about this because of my own personal background. And I know this, there's a particular scripture that is always like hammered into us. It's like, the wife's body is not hers. It belongs to her husband. But they always forget the flip side of that. You know, the writer of the text, you know, did do the inverse, and neither the husband's body, it doesn't belong to him. It belongs to his wife. But you never quite hear that part. Just the first part gets emphasized. And you would always hear that women were morally, we were responsible. So it came down to our modesty of dress. We were responsible for men's sexual behavior and their appetite and just their being, right? So that means, you know, collars up to here and the long denim skirts in the middle of the summer, all these things as to not entice men. If a man wants to be aroused, a man is going to be aroused. You can have on a cotton flannel nightgown. It does not matter. And so just this expectation that women have to bear the burden of men's gaze, of a man's gaze, I still struggle with that concept.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's so punitive. And it's so, for women and for men, because again, men aren't taught that they can be sexually empowered and respectful and have integrity, and that their sexuality isn't something to be controlled. It's to be understood. It's to be explored. It's to be intentionally expressed, but it's not something that needs to be controlled. Mm-hmm. And women with that mindset, again, very, very punitive. And yeah, they're actually responsible. If I dress too, you know, if I show cleavage, if I show my knee, if my clothes are too tight and someone gets aroused, it takes all responsibility away from the men. And it is just placed on the women because the women's job is to be pure. True. And be sexless.
And you know, ankles can be quite sexy and attractive. So, you know, there's a whole fetish kink world out there, and ankles and feet can, you know, really take some people some places. And so it seemed so controlling of this thing that should be really up to the individual to work through their own sexuality, to work through what works for them, or just growing and evolving, be evolved human beings. I don't think that purity culture allowed for evolving, you know, learning how to please a partner, learning how, oh, this could get me in trouble, learning how to please yourself, which is, you know, not appreciated or taught or condoned in those types of in those type of circles. And I remember, so I as you were talking, I grew up in this, so I'm very familiar with all of it. And they would always say that even if you think to lust after a woman, then you've already sinned in your heart. And so there's that whole. So let's talk about deconstructing all of this and how that works for your clients that come. Because these are purity culture rejects that are coming to see you. Bless their hearts. They're starting a new journey.
Yeah, they're looking for, well, some of them aren't, it's interesting. Some of them are just looking to feel that they can have sex and enjoy it. That they aren't broken. That they can express how much they love their partner through sexuality. That's what they're looking for. A lot of people come to me because they're still very much involved in their faith in their church, and they want to heal the sexual relationship. And then there's some people that come to me who have completely rejected their faith and their church or religion, and also want to create a healthy sexual relationship. So it varies. And the main thing really about the deconstruction is, well, one of the themes that I see is that when people come to me, whether they come as individuals or couples, they do not trust themselves. So, you know, they're growing up in a system that tells them how to behave, what to think about, what not to think about, what's right, what's wrong. Mm-hmm. And all their intuitive, deep knowing is squashed.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. And so the deconstruction is, you know, it's a complex process, and it varies mm-hmm. from individual to individual. But one of the main things that's part of that process is helping people come back to trusting themselves, or reclaiming trust in themselves, or trusting themselves for the very first time. Yeah. And so that's a big part of the deconstruction, but it really starts with, I spend a lot of time with couples and individuals of just recognizing and naming the harm, the story, their stories, their experiences, and validating and just really supporting them and just saying, yeah, this has been very harmful to you. And first just starting there. And that's very empowering when people can just name the abuse. Yeah. Very empowering. The deconstruction kind of comes in when they start to really look at things more specifically and say, I was taught this, I was expected to live this way, it showed up in my life this way, this is how mm-hmm. it influenced me and impacted me. And then to realize, wow, that is huge. And what pieces of that do I want to completely throw out? What pieces of that may still be acceptable to me? And so that's part of the deconstruction. The other part is just throughout the whole process is a weaving in and out of grief work and releasing shame. Because as people get into their stories and their experiences, they have their emotions right alongside all of that. Mm-hmm. And so deep sadness, deep grief for what was lost.
Thank you for going into that. So when you were saying grief, it's like, what are we grieving as we're deconstructing?
Yeah. Grieving the loss of being able to explore your sexuality as an adolescent and feel good and feel like you have a right to experience pleasure. The loss of being able to just be curious and not shamed. The loss of just a sense of autonomy. The loss of being comfortable in your own body.
In your own skin, yeah.
Your own skin. The loss of being able to cultivate your own thought process about your sexual identity, your gender identity, how you want to express that. All of that was taken. It's co-opted by the system of purity culture. It's, you're told how to act and behave and what to think and feel. And
yeah.
And then for people that, you know, I also work with a lot of clients that grew up in these very controlling systems and still were very explored a lot sexually.
Mm.
And they tend to carry a lot of shame because every exploration left them with terrible shame, you know, knowing that I did something wrong, I'm a bad person, I'm going to hell. I caused somebody else to go to hell. And so a lot of the work is just really, really helping clients separate their bodies and pleasure and sex from feeling guilty and feeling shame. And that, I think that's an ongoing life process.
Oh, it is. I have, I know women who, you know, grew up in these kinds of environments. And, you know, there are teachings that are quite, oh, what is the word I'm looking for? Invasive, right into your marital space. So again, I grew up in this environment. And so, you know, the scripture that was often read is like the marriage bed is undefiled. But at the same time, you know, there were certain things that you could and could not do even as a married person. And so even once you were married, you still couldn't, you weren't free to explore or really be with your partner because it's like, no, this is off limits. This is off limits. We can't do this. We can only do this. And so it just, the women that I know, they still struggle. They still mm-hmm. struggle, even though they may, they're kind of deconstructing and trying to reevaluate what's right for them and their partner, or, you know, some aren't even married anymore. And so just trying to rebuild, reconstruct themselves. And I will say it is a process.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I will definitely advise that they talk to somebody and not try to, you know, work this. It's good to know that there are sex therapists, and especially sex therapists that are trained in this purity culture, and kind of walk them through their journey to healing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so important to, it's deep work, and it's life-changing, and it can, you know, oftentimes it's very much paired with healing trauma and that is really hard to do by yourself. It's really hard to do just, I've had couples come to me and they, you know, told me they've tried to just deal with it on their own together and talking and, you know, but it's very difficult because the emotions are so deep and, you know, some couples can become closer because of it and turn toward each other, and other couples become blaming and, shaming of each other. And then that creates a whole other cycle that's very, very difficult to deal with for them without professional help. And even in the context of therapy, it takes time. And it takes a lot of people learning how to cultivate compassion for themselves and each other in the process, for sure. Yeah.
So is this an ongoing process? Do you ever really truly heal? What I know about healing is healing happens in layers, and you can shed one layer and yay, we're done. And then you find out, oh my God, there's another layer. Like, I thought I did this. So what does complete healing look like? Is that even possible? Or do you always get the thing in the back of your head and it's like, okay, I have to, you know, retell the story. Every time, do you have to retell yourself? It's like, I'm okay. My body's okay. My partner's okay. It's like, do you ever get to a place of, you know, this is good. And it just becomes second nature.
Yeah, I think so. So the healing path is, I mean, there's so many ways to heal and it's so different for everyone. But I would think in general that there can be huge spurts of growth and releasing and freedom from shaming mindsets and re-traumatized again because you're having sex and some old trauma comes back. And I think that there's going to be moments and experiences of freedom from all of that. And then, you know, out of the blue, it can be something where, you know, maybe you haven't fully resourced yourself. One day you're tired, you feel stressed about other things, and you and your partner are trying to have sex and it's just not working. And then old shame may come back. Negative narratives in your head may come back. And so I think it really can come in and out. But the key is, I think, when that happens, helping people have tools to use, right? So it's not about perfect healing and we're gonna fix this and then you're done. And I tell people right off the bat, I would just want to say, first off, you're not broken. Mm. You are a whole person. You are a whole human being. And the harm is real. The trauma is real. The abuse is real, but you are whole. And giving them tools to work with when they're having a traumatic flashback, when they're feeling old shame messages come into their mind, giving them the tools so that then they say, okay, so even if those things happen, I can take care of myself. Or I know how to respond to my partner if my partner is having some kind of being triggered in some way. And so that is also very empowering for people because it's like, I might feel old shame come in, but I will know how to address it and how to acknowledge it and how to care for myself, which then it's so much easier just to let it kind of flow through us rather than completely changing our whole outlook and completely ruining an experience.
Oh, that's awesome. So as we get ready to close out, can you tell, how would you advise someone who's listening, who grew up in the culture, they're struggling sexually, whether they're married or not, they're just still struggling and still having the old narratives, or they're still dealing with guilt and with shame. How would you advise them? What do you want them to know?
I think going back to what I just said about letting them know that they're not broken, that they grew up in a system that was oppressive and really stole their birthright for pleasure and erotic liberation, which is the freedom to express ourselves erotically, creativity. The erotic is so big, it includes sex, but it's all about the creative, right? And so to let people know that erotic liberation, which includes sexual expression and pleasure, is their birthright. And they're capable of finding out what that means for them, healing old wounds, and creating something that feels safe, embodied, and pleasurable all at the same time. That's ultimately what people can do for themselves.
Do you know how I don't want to say it's not triggering, but the word you use, it creates a knee-jerk reaction in a lot of people, especially those of us who came up in purity culture. When you talk about experiencing pleasure, that's almost so taboo. It's like, no, we don't get to have pleasure or experience pleasure. That, no, you don't ever hear that. And so it's such a liberating experience once you can allow yourself. Mm-hmm. And you do, and it takes work to get there to actually experience pleasure. And I think I saw a post somewhere, and it's like, I deserve to experience pleasure. I was like, oh my. Well, put that on a tattoo. It's like,
yeah.
I like, more power to you. I thought that was so awesome. And it takes a very bold person or someone who is a home in their own body. Mm-hmm. And have liberated themselves to say, you know what, I deserve to have and to experience pleasure.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and I think learning to love your body, and then it doesn't have to fit a mold or a, you know, whatever people say is sexy or beautiful or healthy, mm-hmm. that you can love your body and honor your body. And that includes honoring your sexual energy, mm-hmm. and your desire for pleasure, which is, I mean, this is why I love doing this work, because it is so, there's nothing more joyful than to watch people learn what brings them pleasure. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, they haven't even allowed themselves to think that they can experience, oh, I can experience that. I'm allowed. It's safe. And once they realize they can, to begin to connect with that and then connect to themselves in a deep way, with unconditional acceptance, it's mm-hmm. awesome.
Now, you said something and it reminded me. So you talked about loving ourselves and loving our bodies. So on top of purity culture, if you have any type of body dysmorphia, if you're comparing yourself to what you see on social media, and this is too big, this is too small, this is not proportioned right, one is bigger than the other, it's not symmetrical, that also plays into this narrative where you can't experience pleasure, where you can't be fully present for yourself or your partner. So on top of purity culture, now you've got all these expectations of a body that may not fit what you're seeing. And so the conversation, it can get quite complicated very quickly.
Yeah, it's complex. It has mm-hmm. all these, like, purity culture has all these branches that, you know, perfectionism mm-hmm. and body image and eating disorders and all that stuff is gets kind of played out and manifested from this very rigid system.
Oh, you said eating disorders. There's another documentary that's out right now. I think it may be old though, that talked about, and it aligns kind of with the purity culture and this thing that God wants you thin kind of mentality. Oh, ooh. I will send you the link. I just saw it. And it all kind of like ties together. And again, it ties into the male gaze and the reasons why we need to perfect ourselves and be a certain way, and at least for the women in purity culture. So thank you for sharing with us, you know, what men experience, and that they too have been injured and robbed of pleasure and having healthy, whole experiences sexually. And it's good to know that, one, that you're doing this work, and two, that people are coming to you and they're finding healing and they're on their healing journey.
Thank you, Lisa. Thanks for having me and giving me a chance to talk about this with you. And yeah, I really appreciate it.
So tell everyone, how can they get in touch with you if they want to start their healing journey? And you see everybody, right? Everybody can come.
I do. So I am licensed in the state of Washington to do therapy, but I teach classes online, which when I'm teaching a class, anybody can come. So they don't have to live in Washington because it's not therapy. And so I'm starting a new purity culture class this fall. And if people are interested in that, they can go to my website, and that is ryancouplestherapy.com. And or follow me on Instagram, which is also at Ryan Couples Therapy. So those are the best ways to reach out. Check me out on my website and Instagram. Yeah.
And we'll be sure to give links, everything. It'll be on the show notes. Jane, thank you so much. Thank you so much for sharing this. And hopefully we've helped some people start their journey to healing.
Yes, thank you. And thank you so much for trusting me and asking me to talk with you.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for listening to another episode of This Woman Knows podcast. For show notes, blog posts, guest booking information, and sponsorship opportunities, visit us online at www.thiswomanknows.com today.